What up, y'all? Welcome to Chip and Zay here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Happy Thursday, everybody. Thursday, January 8th. Got all things transfer portal going down. I see my man in the waiting room with the hair on point today, the great Chip Brown.
Hey, in the immortal words of Judy Brown, happiness is a choice. And what a crazy day already that we've had, you know? I think the commitment from Relique Brown is nice, but yeah, we got a lot of stuff to get caught up on, and I'm gonna try to stay as focused as I can given the situation. But, you know, we had some interesting stuff last night, like Bo Barnes. You know, Zena Umazulu, who 4 days ago posted, you know, Texas with Texas football, 100. And today he's in the portal. I mean, the bottom line is, you can't pay everybody, but man, it's, I don't know. You can't pay everybody, I guess. So, but you know, Bo Barnes, he goes into the portal, because he wants to, you know, he wants to hear from his defensive coaches, and he doesn't hear from them. So he goes into the portal. Then last night he gets, he gets a call from Muschamp, Johnny Nansen. Hey, you're important to us. And, you know, it, now we have to see how the rest of it goes. And, you know, they got to get their contract stuff figured out. You know, is it going to be enough to get Bo Barnes out of the portal? You'd like to think so, because that guy looks like a guy who can help you. Looks like a developmental player you need at a position of need. So it's, you know, and look, if you're recruiting at a high level and you have for a while, like Steve Sarkisian, it's going to be harder and harder for you to keep your second and third team players. You have 4 stars and 5 stars waiting to play who will start at other programs, and they're going to come after those players and pay them more than you can pay them. And that's a situation that the teams that have been at the top, like Georgia, Alabama, Texas, in terms of the recruiting game, that's something that they're experiencing right now, that, you know, some of these other programs that haven't recruited at a high level for 4 or 5 years, like Indiana, Texas Tech, that are not having to deal with that right now. You know, their recruiting classes were not highly ranked. So those players that were recruited 2, 3 years ago, they'll say goodbye to those guys and keep trying to hit home runs. This is where we are. This is where we are when you have free agency every year. So, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Jamie French hitting the portal is a prime example on last year, Brandon Harris, Steve Sarkisian, everybody involved in making those decisions on how much to pay the incoming freshman coming in was a miss, because you got a lot of money you're wasting, not spending, you're wasting money on a guy when you're not playing him. And he's just riding pine, getting splinters in his ass on the bench, can't get no bump. not even on special teams. We can't get to do the punt return, something. And I can't knock Jamie French at all, just like I can't knock anyone else trying to better their lives, and whether that's more money or opportunity, whether the scheme's going to be better on their next place they go to. Can't knock them. But also, what is Jamie French supposed to do? You're playing Dalen McCutcheon over him. You saw what Kalik Lockett did in the Cheese at Citrus Bowl. I know Parker Livingston's in at Oklahoma. I know DeAndre Moore is there, but has made it known they're trying to bring in other wide receivers. They got Emmett Mosley. He going to play. They got Ryan Wingo. He going to play. So I also expect McCutcheon and Kalik Lockett to get better too. So if you got these guys in front of you, and who knows what they're going to do with Michael Terry. We still have no idea what Steve Sarkisian is going to fit with him. Is he going to be a running back? Is he going to be a wide receiver? You know, more gadget guy where he does both. Debo Samuel comparisons always come up with Michael Terry. I know you compare him to little Jordan Humphrey. I don't know what's going to happen with Michael Terry.
Well, he needs to be like little Jordan Humphrey. I don't know that he is. I don't know what position he has. I'm a little mystified by Michael Terry.
Yeah. And that, again, they paid him a lot of money to come here too. So if they can't figure out what to do with him, then he becomes a waste. I hope that's not the case. But again, Jamie French made a lot of Skrilla to ride the bench this year. And I don't think they're trying to do that, because these guys, they're hitting the portal. You pay them a lot of money, then they're hitting the portal. So that's tough to see. And they're trying to, you know, get it back even and not get into those messes this upcoming season. But it seems like with what we're seeing, and again, you got Malik Brown, so it ain't as slow as it was yesterday. Like, let's be grateful of that.
Malik Brown,
he's going to make some noise for the Horn, especially with what Steve Sarkisian and Jabbar Jalouk will be able to do with him. But French and Zena and just all these guys that you would want to stick it out and be along for the ride and be a part of the developmental process, with just this era of the transfer portal and NIL, that's just not the case.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, if Jamie French would have knocked it out of the park in fall camp, he would have been the one playing, and not Dalen McCutcheon. But Dalen McCutcheon was the one who was running the sharper routes, catching the ball. And you got to compete every day. And these guys are learning. This is a business, man. You like having all that money? If you think you've arrived, you are a fool. If you don't care about the money and you just care about competing and being the best, you're going to kill it. If you're content with the money, you're probably not going to, you know, go very far. If you love the game and you want to be great and you want to be developed, and because you want to go to the league and make an imprint, then you're going to be okay. You're chasing greatness. You're not chasing money. You chase greatness, the money will chase you. And that's what, you know, these guys are learning. Look, it's a lot. It's a lot at 18. And some of these guys don't have other role models to look up to yet. Some they do. I mean, Jeremiah Smith got paid, keeps putting the ball in the end zone. You know, that's a guy who, he's chasing greatness, so the money's going to chase him. Cam Coleman, going to be interesting to see what his payday ends up being. But, you know, he's a guy who, when you turn on the film, he wins the contested catch. He's got the catch radius. He's long. He's what you want. He looks great.
He's the only reason why Auburn won games and was in games this year. Really the only reason. So I understand it to a certain extent. I understand it from his point of view. I also understand it from Texas' point of view. And
that's one year. You're getting Cam Coleman for 1 year. If a program's going to pay him $5 million for 1 year, go get it. Good luck. I don't know what other talent is on that roster, but you know, everything I've heard is right around 2, which is a lot for 1 year. A lot.
Yeah, because if he's getting 2, what's Colin Simmons getting?
Right. Right. Colin Simmons is going to be knocking on that door. He's going to be real close. He's going to be at 1.5 or higher. I'll tell you that.
And good for him. And he put in the time. And it was organic. He came in as a recruit, came in early signing period, January 2024, and has busted his ass and has earned everything that he's gotten. Started off slow this past year, really picked it up. One of the best edge rushers in all the nation, like a lot of people predicted. So I understand him, but we've been talking about it, Chip. Just you're really risking your culture, bringing in these dudes that weren't a part of those brutal 90-100 degree workouts that Tory Beckman's putting you through. And yeah, maybe some guys would be cool with somebody making that much money because they see it as, okay, he's helping the team. But other guys, I talked about the jealousy aspect. Hey, how the hell, what the hell is he getting this for? He didn't put in the grind like us. He ain't one of the OGs that's been here from jump. You can feel a certain way, and it's up to Sark and Brandon Harris, and again, everyone's involved to figure all that out.
Yeah. 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 It's look, Brandon Harris, that guy's got a tough job, man. Yeah. But here's the thing. You gotta be able to talk to these guys and maintain a relationship. You got to be able to communicate with these guys and maintain a relationship. You got to give them tough news and maintain a relationship. And because in a lot of ways, Brandon Harris is the spokesman for Steve Sarkisian when dealing with player negotiations. And, you know, there's a way to let guys know, hey, we're probably not going to be able to hit your number. If you can get that number, man, we understand. We love you. We appreciate you. We want you to stay. You know, there's got to be that because Texas is in that spot right now. They're in that spot where when you're recruiting high-end players and there are schools that also recruited those players who need a player at that position and don't have all the depth on the roster that you have and they can pay you, you're going to have to say, hey, man, we want you, we need you, but we understand. And just try to be as, you know, upfront and transparent about it as possible.
Yeah, I don't really understand the fans hating on Brandon Harris. I saw one fan compare him to Jerry Jones, which isn't even close to fair. Like, Brandon Harris has a certain amount of money that he has to deal with when it comes to all this negotiations. You know, people were talking about it with Bo Ogden, too. Like, Bo Ogden's done a really crappy job with the men's basketball team. Same thing. You get a certain amount of money. You got to go with the coach, let him know, hey, can we get on the same page about the guys you like, you know, blah, 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 to figure it out. Like, it's still not like the NFL. People see GM and they look at it as you got the same role as you do in the NFL. No, they're slightly different, even though it's the same title. Working in the NFL and whatever the hell's going on in college sports right now, very different, because at least there's rules in a National Football League that help the GMs to where these agents know what's up and they're not coming in crazy and unrealistic. Here in college football, there ain't no rules. So, yeah, these agents, some ain't even certified because that's a rule. You don't have to be certified. You could be Uncle Ray Ray and be the agent of five-star Jerome, and he could be working deals out here with no experience, Chip. Zero experience. Ain't been to school, probably dropped out of high school. Just everything bad, but dealing with these big-time decisions. So I give Brandon Harris grace, man. He's trying to figure it out. Last year, made mistakes. Just too many guys that were worth way too much money riding the bench. So they're trying to fix those mistakes and have a different mentality going into 2026. And right now, fixing that, it seems a little slow. But I appreciate them realizing, yeah, we can't keep doing what we're doing and paying these young guys coming in that ain't giving us a damn thing on the field. And if that means less scholarships, all right, like, so be it. Which sucks because it seems kind of the opposite of what I was thinking coming into the season. You get 105. So how could you possibly end up with less? But those guys that you bring on, you got to make sure they're important. You can't just throw guys money, throw guys scholarships at this point when they're not going to see the field. That cannot keep happening because it's going to put you in the bind like you are now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people, I think this is where it gets tricky and people don't, you know, they think Texas is unique. But the top programs are having more guys leave than are coming in. The programs that have been recruiting at a high level for a longer period of time than Indiana and Texas Tech. So you got to, you know, people are saying, you know, these players are leaving. Can we upgrade from them? In certain situations, maybe. I mean, I think Relik Brown has a different skill set than Quintrevion Weisner. Now, is he the same heart and soul guy? Is he the same, I'm going to give it everything at every second of practice, every second of a game. I'm going to talk everybody up. If I see a guy down, I'm going to pick him up. Is he that? I don't know. He looks like he's a pretty fiery, emotional guy. He's going to give you some juice. So, you know.
And think about if Quintrevion Weisner would have stayed with Relik Brown. You're good. You're great in that spot, which I'm sure they tried to pitch to Quintrevion Weisner. Like, hey, man, we got to have a 1A, 1B situation because we're going to hopefully play a lot of games this year. And in a 9-game SEC schedule plus Ohio State, that wear and tear from a guy who had injury problems this year, that's a lot. That's a lot. So the numbers that were getting thrown around with Q Weisner, they just didn't make sense. And right. I think Malik Brown, under the offensive line that we just saw, he would have been better. No offense to Quintrevion Weisner, just the explosiveness that Relik Brown has opposed to what Quintrevion Weisner brings. With a bad offensive line, which I hope it's not bad in 2026, but if it's still a little shaky, you at least got a back that can make some things happen a little bit more with a shaky offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a legit question. Royal Blue says we've upgraded at running back and cornerback, still need wide receiver, another running back, linebacks. I mean, again, offensive line, number one, you need at least two offensive linemen. You need at least two guards. If you can get Connor Robertson back at center, there's a guy who's been in your culture, who's a try-hard guy, solid, not spectacular, but smart guy. You know, there's good and bad on his film for sure, but you've got to get the offensive line right, and you got to get the linebacker situation right. Because yes, you've got Ty'Anthony Smith, you got Tyler Atkinson coming in as a five-star who's probably getting paid good chunk of dough, and he's going to play as a freshman. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We'll see how special he is. Maybe he's Kelvin Banks special, and he can just walk in and be a dude from day one. Zach Thomas was that way. Derek Johnson was too, to a degree, but he was so fast. He would get himself out of position. He settled down so much more as a sophomore and then was just a nightmare by the time we got to 2004, because he was 6'4", 230, and could run like Relik Brown. So, yeah, I mean, look, you've got – I know losing Zena, yeah, that hurts. I mean, he – 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. He had a sack in the Citrus Bowl. He's a guy who's got great length, but you've got Colin Simmons and you've got Lance Jackson. You've got Richard Wesley coming in. You've got, Jamarian, I got names on the brain.
Jamarian Carlton
from Temple coming in. And remember, Richard Wesley is 6'4", 245. Jamarian Carlton is 6'5", 265.
Yeah. And isn't Wesley young?
Yeah,
isn't Wesley's like young. Ojimo when he was
Wesley's, coming in? Yes, he's 17.
Yeah.
He's going to be 17 as a freshman in the fall. So, you know, you got guys, you got Brad Spence, you got Colton Vosick, you got Justice Terry. You know, we got to see how Justice Terry's body continues to develop, because he's perfect for that strong side defensive end that Will Muschamp covets. He wants that strong side defensive end to be able to slide inside and play the 4-eye. When he goes to an odd front, he needs that end to be, in between the tackle and the guard and be able to take on that gap, control that gap. And, there's going to be a lot of odd front with Will Muschamp. There's going to be a lot of 5-man front. There's going to be 4-man. He's going to confuse. His whole thing is confusion. And given the appearance that these guys are blitzing, he's going to overload one side and then he's going to drop that whole side and send, pressure from the other side. It's going to be fun to watch. Muschamp, when he's in his bag, can make you look silly. And then when he's got talent, big time talent, NFL talent, he can make you look really silly. So, he knows what he's looking for. This Bo Barnes situation is going to be interesting to watch, because there has been some, poor communication, I think, at times. And sometimes you're like, okay, are they trying to give this guy the soft goodbye or the hard goodbye? Or is someone dropping the ball there? Because, Bo Barnes, they told him a number that I think he was okay with, as long as he was told by his coaches, hey, you're going to play. We see you as a guy who's going to be in the rotation. And, just tell him what the plan is, because if you're not a big part of the plan, then, yeah, I'm going to move on. And so he got that call from Muschamp, from Nansen, and it sounded like things were moving in the direction of getting resolved. But then you got to finish the deal. You got to Okay, here are the new numbers. We good? Signature done. And you know, from what I heard before we went on the air, the here are the new papers, signature done had not happened. So, and this is a guy who's already, you know, like, am I important or not? So there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And the communication has to be really good.
And I understand that. And Elijah Bo Barnes, he has every right to want to have that communication with his coaches so he can know what to expect if he does decide to stay. But also, man, you're already getting paid. Now we have to promise you playing time?
No. He just wants, okay, what you told me, I need it in writing so I can sign it. It's that simple. Like, I was told Jordan Washington was told a number. His agent said, okay, send over the paperwork. They never sent the paperwork.
Damn.
The agent tried, I was told 15 times, calls, texts, we need the paperwork. And when it dragged out that far, they were like, screw it, we're out of here.
Wow.
So damn. Was that, you know, sometimes it's, if that's how you're letting a guy know that it's, we're not, you know, we don't see eye to eye anymore. That's a tough way to do it.
Yeah, that's a little cold, ain't it?
You know, if you tell me a number and I'm like, okay, just send me the paperwork. Let's get it done. And then the paperwork doesn't come. And you're like, hey, are you sending the paperwork? So.
Yeah, you could say, hey, I don't think it's a good fit. We just brought over my man from Michigan State.
Well,
we like Nick Townsend. You'd be 4 for 5 on the depth chart.
Right. And every day things are changing based on what you're trying to fill. Like Texas has to get they have to get these offensive line spots filled. They have to get the linebackers filled so that they know that they've got their needs covered. And the longer you go when a agent for a player knows you need something, their leverage goes up.
Yep.
The cost goes up. And then you start to look at guys, developmental guys like this, Dylan Sikorsky from Oregon State. He's a rising sophomore. He's got 6 starts at left guard. But he's got really good size. He's 6'4", 332. You know, he's a guy you look at and you say, okay, we can mold him. He's got 3 years of eligibility. He's visiting today. You know, he's not a finished product. He's not Joe Brunner from Wisconsin who started at left guard for 2 seasons. This guy started at left guard for 6 games and on a not so good team. Yeah. So you're, again, now you're looking for that guy who shows you promise on a bad team. Man, we can get him at a good price. We can mold him. They're trying to cover all their bases. They're looking at Andrew Sprague and Jake Guarnera, who were fed up with Sharon Moore and the lack of discipline in the program, but they weren't fed up with Michigan.
Yeah.
And all their friends and all their relationships and all their teammates and their bonds, you know, they were frustrated because they're embarrassed. The program. Horny. Huh?
Coach was horny. They were frustrated.
Yeah, they're frustrated. So the program's a joke. They're pissed. They're in the portal. But then Whittingham comes in and Whittingham is all about discipline and details. They're like, oh, okay. Okay. All right. We're good. Well, Sprague was a guy Texas was like, and Texas was seen as a favorite for him, but Kyle Whittingham comes in, said the right things. So it's not like Texas made some bad offer to him. He went back, talked to his coach, realized, you know what? Okay, we're going to be okay. I don't have to give up all these bonds, all this work, all this blood, sweat, and tears I've put in. we're gonna get better. We're gonna be a more detail oriented program. I can play for this guy. So he decides to, Guarnera and Sprague decide to stay put. And so, you know, everything's changing, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, we've been talking about the leverage, you know, my petty ass, if I was Ty Anthony Smith, cause that linebacker room, it's like Gary Coleman small right now. So why wouldn't I'd leverage that? Be like, hey, y'all might have to give me some more Skrilla, because if I'm getting all the snaps, that's going to be a lot of wear and tear on my body. And Tiny Smith looking around, and he like Will Smith in the final episode of Fresh Prince when he was in the crib and it was just empty by himself. That's what it's like for Tiny Smith. Johnny Nansen's right there. He's chilling with him. But yeah, like that leverage game, it's tough. And you're already Texas. I talked about this too. Like, people are coming in with ignorant narratives because it's Texas and they think they got all the money in the world. And they think that they're saying screw revenue sharing and that 20 something million that everybody's getting. Texas ain't doing that. We know Texas has more, which in a way they should, you know, with that third party and all the connections and the long game and understanding that Texas degree. It goes a long way after your career, especially if you come back to the state and live here. But they ain't thinking about that right now, Chip. So that's – I really wish that this coaching staff would just say, we're this good of coaches to where we could bring in some dude, diamond in the rough, ain't asking for nothing, maybe at a small mid-major – maybe go the Trinidad Chambliss route and go D2, and we're going to develop them and we're going to put them in the right situations to win because we see something in them and we can make it work. And again, yeah, I wish it was easy where you could just get a guy and they know exactly what to do and you barely have to coach them and you could go on and win a natty. But sometimes that ain't the case. Sometimes you got to coach them up. You got to develop them. You got to put them in the right situations to win ball games. So if this coaching staff has to do that, then, hey, more hours at the facility. Sorry, L'Oreal. We can't go on that date tonight. I got to work. I got to grind. Last year, you saw what happened last year. Sorry, can't do it. We can't go out of town this week. So that's just... that's where I'm at. Because, hey, okay, you didn't get the guys you want, but bring in guys that, like you've been saying, Chip, just got chip on their shoulder, got something to prove that's been a part of losing and is tired of that, and they want to change that, and they will do whatever it takes for your program. Like, if it's, and I don't think that's desperate. Like, if you're a coach, you want to do that. You want to bring in guys that want to be there. At least want to be there and not gonna take an arm and a leg to get them in. And then once you get them in, they already broke the bank. And then you realize we paid them and they ain't worth shit. Oh, no. After the year Kyle Flynn and that offensive line had, you can't do that. You can't do that, man.
Yeah.
As Jack says, it's not a money problem. All right.
Well, you know, yeah, Texas is losing a lot of players, but are they losing their frontline guys? I mean, they lost a frontline guy in Leonga Lafau. And
Dion got him, by the way. You see that?
Yeah.
Leonga Lafau going to Colorado.
All right. I see our man, Lance Taylor, our SEC insider and prognosticator and Rams homer. Lance Taylor of Next Round Live and lanceslock.com for the picks. LT, Happy New Year. How you doing?
Hey, Happy New Year, fellas. Good to catch up with you guys. Appreciate you having me on again.
Absolutely. You, Lance. I mean, we got playoff games tonight and tomorrow night. Thursday night for the berth in the national championship. Lance, Zay and I were terrible in our picks. I was wrong on Ohio State, Georgia, and Texas Tech. I got Indiana right. Zay was right on Miami. He was wrong on Texas Tech, Bama, and Georgia. What do you think, LT?
Well, not to pat myself on the back. I am 5-1 against the number in these college football playoffs. I did have Ohio State over Miami. I didn't think Ohio State's offensive line would get that dominated. I mean, look, there was a question mark going into it. We know how good Mesidor and Bain are. But that was an offensive line that had only given up 11 sacks and basically gave up, you know, almost half of that 5-1 game. And they got completely dominated. And that was the one I was wrong on. I do have a side tonight, Miami Ole Miss. And, again, we're cooking 61% in the regular season of the NFL. We closed it out at 61%, which any of your guys out there that are listening and gamble know 61% is a big ass number. So it's been a really good football season and we'll see how the rest of the week goes. I'm so excited though. I mean, as you mentioned, like this is one of the best weekends of football in general, because you got semifinal tonight, semifinal tomorrow night, doubleheader NFL playoffs, wild card weekend on Saturday, triple header Sunday, and then one final Monday night game. I mean, absolutely fantastic.
So I thought Trinidad Chambliss was so good last week. I'm like, why is he trying to get a waiver? He just needs to go to the league. I mean, your thoughts on that Ole Miss, Georgia, you know, Ole Miss, no Lane. Pete Golding looks like he's just on the level. Players are playing for him. What's your read on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. So if Pete is able to win, if Ole Miss is able to beat Miami tonight, Pete will have 3 college football playoff wins, which will put him second amongst SEC active coaches with postseason college football playoff wins in front of guys like Sark, who has 2. I mean, that's just kind of crazy when you think about it like that. Kirby's got 5. Nick Saban had 9. But, you know, as far as active guys, he's already tied with Sark. I forgot who else is in. I guess DeBoer's in there with a couple, but pretty amazing what's been going on with Ole Miss. And they're so easy to pull for now because Lane is such a piece of shit. And my friend said that, but it just makes it that much better because, you know, behind the scenes, Lane is pulling against Ole Miss. And, you know, Ole Miss, it just seems like they could never get out of their own way. You know, a team that very, very well documented never got to an SEC championship game or has never been to an SEC championship game. And you go back to Hugh Freeze's final year, I think it was in 15, where, you know, it was 4th and 36 for Arkansas. And Hunter Henry, the tight end, just throws it over his head and it bounces perfectly to Alex Collins, who takes it 36 yards and they score and win the game. And all they had to do was, you know, Ole Miss just had to win that game and they're in Atlanta. So they've always been jinxed. And, you know, for a fan base, and I said this earlier because we had Dan Orlovsky on and he was talking about, he was calling a game just 3 years ago in Bloomington between Penn State and Indiana. And he said before the game kicked, literally there was 5,000 people in the stand. There we go. Sorry about that. I brought up the fact that, you know, Indiana, it's a great story right now. And I was amongst a ton of Indiana fans in California this past week. But it's not like a lot of those fans earned where they are because they weren't even going to the games. Ole Miss fans have been passionate, you know, dedicated fans going to the Grove. And maybe they love some of those games early. But you kind of feel for some of those fan bases that have never tasted this. And this is Ole Miss's most important game in their program history tonight. This is Mario Cristobal's most important game as a head coach on the Miami side, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, when you look at this Miami team, Lance, I mean, not many people saw that Ohio State game coming. You saw the line in that, but just Reuben Bain, Akeem Mesidor, that defense has really turned it up. Carson Beck is just playing smart enough to allow the defense to make the most noise for Miami, and Mario Cristobal hasn't screwed anything up. Can they keep that up tonight?
You know, it's a fascinating question, Zay, because I think so many people are waiting on one of those things to happen. I think more so in the Cristobal camp, because when you start to look at Carson Beck a couple of years ago, I thought going into his sophomore or redshirt sophomore season, final season at Georgia, I thought he was going to be the number one overall pick in last May's draft. Obviously got hurt against Texas in that SEC championship game, transfers out. But that guy is 15-3 against ranked teams as a starting quarterback. That's pretty incredible. You know, Bain has got 63 quarterback pressures, which is the third most in the FBS. You look at Messidor, he's got 10.5 sacks, leading the ACC in that category. Mark Fletcher is one of the more underrated running backs in all of college football. You saw what he did against Texas A&M. So it's just like all come together for Miami. And after losing to SMU to absorb that second loss, they've won 6 consecutive games, which is kind of crazy. That is the longest current win streak right now, active win streak in the FBS. But over those 6 games, Carson Beck's only thrown 1 pick. So they're protecting the football. As you said, he's doing just enough, and that defense is carrying them. But on the other side, there's something, you know, as good as Miami's playing right now, there's something about Ole Miss and this chemistry where they're all playing together, and it's like us against the world. And it's just, it's been a lot of fun to watch. And Chambliss, you know, a guy that Lane Kiffin openly admitted early in the season that he signed this guy to be a quality backup out of Ferris State. And what he has done, and Chip, to your point, like, if he came out this year, really, like, I don't know what the measurables are, but I've heard a comp to Russell Wilson, which when you watch him, that makes a lot of sense. He throws a nice deep ball. His escapability is next level. You saw it against Georgia, fully on display. But I think Chambliss could be the third quarterback taken off the board if he was to go. I assume he's going to get the waiver passed, and I think he'll be back at Ole Miss. We'll see what happens there, but he has been fabulous to watch. Listening to him, he says all the right things. Pete Golding says all the right things. Easy, easy to pull for Ole Miss right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, typically when you have teams that are close in terms of talent, you go with the better quarterback. And to me, the better quarterback is Chambliss because he can do more.
I don't disagree with that. And I tend to look at, you know, headsets and quarterbacks. Pete Golding's, you know, was just one of my clients, local butcher shop, picking up a couple of steaks for the game tonight. And he's like, did you ever think 4 years ago Pete Golding would be a head coach? And this is a narrative from a lot of Alabama fans that really didn't like Pete Golding. They didn't like him as the defensive coordinator. And it is kind of fascinating that he was kind of on the outs with Alabama fans, and now he's in the situation he is. But man, what a tremendous job that, you know, he's done in this short amount of time. But, you know, to your point, I typically would go quarterback and I would throw in head coach, and it's yet to be seen how good Pete Golding's going to be, but I still don't have a ton of confidence in Mario Cristobal, but Mario Cristobal is shutting a lot of people up. I mean, they are in the semifinals. They're a 3.5 point favorite tonight. If they're able to win this game, man, they're, you know, playing for a national championship. Their first would be their first since 2001, which is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah. Before I ask you about Oregon and Indiana, I just want to know, how did your experience at the Rose Bowl? I know you've been plenty of times, but how did that go? Clearly, Bama getting curb stomped. Ty Simpson enters the draft. Just your thoughts on how Alabama ended the season, Ty Simpson going off to the NFL, and everything that came with the end of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, Zay, I kind of agreed. And by the way, I was in a local bar downtown Pasadena by the time the comments came out from Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler. I left when it was 10-0 in the second quarter, where there was a meat of the second quarter to go. I was ready to get the hell out of there because that was my fourth trip to the Rose Bowl. Chip, I know you've been. It's a shithole, and I'm not, like, over-exaggerating. It's just there's something cool about standing in the stands and seeing the San Gabriel Mountains and looking at that field and knowing what's at stake, but the whole venue, the concessions are shitty. The everybody involved in that whole operation, nobody knows what's going on. And, you know, prime example, we pull in, we get there 3 hours early because I was doing man on the street interviews with a bunch of Indiana fans, some Bama fans. It literally was 10 or 15 to 1 Indiana fans, and I'm not exaggerating. But my other guys went in to do pregame and postgame stuff. So they were in the stadium early. We got there 3 hours before to roam the parking lot. And so we pull in and we had an parking pass. Well, dude tells us you got to go up here, take a left at Rosemont. It's over here. So we wait in all this traffic, like an hour. We get there and they're like, dude, it's all the way back on the other side. And I'm just like, nobody knows what the hell is going on here. Very, very frustrating. They were letting fireworks go off from this tailgate right behind the main bathroom on the front gate. And like when they immediately went off, I was like, shit, man, we're having a drive-by or something. Everybody was completely spooked. And they just continue to let these fireworks periodically go off from a random tailgate. Like, nobody knew what was going on there. It's a cool experience one time. I will never, unless the Rams have a Super Bowl situation in the Rose Bowl, I will never go to a Rose Bowl again. I can guarantee you that. Indiana fans, obviously starved for something good to happen to them. A little arrogant for a fan base that's never done anything, because everyone I talked to, and probably a little alcohol involved with this, they were like, we're going to whip Alabama's ass. And they did, to their credit. They absolutely did. But, it rained the whole time we were out there. It was in the low 60s the whole time. The weather wasn't ideal. It was fun. The Rams won. I got to go back to SoFi for the second time this year. And so that was a lot of fun. I ate well. I met some really interesting people. It was a fun experience, but I'm glad to be home.
Okay. So now you look at it and you've got, Indiana and Oregon. Indiana went out to Oregon and won by 10. This is a rematch. What do you think of that game?
It's a really difficult game to handicap because, as you guys know, and it's well documented that, you play a team a second time in a season, it's really difficult to beat them. I did think that they kind of manhandled, Oregon when they played in Autzen. And, outside of the pick six that Mendoza threw in the early fourth quarter, it was all Oregon. And it was all Indiana. It was all Indiana's defense. Completely shut down Oregon, forced a couple of turnovers. Five sacks on Dante Moore. I think Indiana's the best team in college football. Now, again, beating Oregon for a second time with that Oregon defense is going to be really, really difficult. If Dante Moore is on, they've got a great shot. Sadiq, the tight end, to me, has got to be more involved. They rely way too much on Malik Benson, his big time, big play ability. Davison, a guy that's got 15 rushing touchdowns, is out for Oregon. I think it's going to come down to up front, and Indiana has been so dominant on both sides of the ball. But again, the number's 3.5 right now. I haven't figured out which direction I'm going to go. Both of these semifinal games are so evenly matched. And it's just amazing. Like, if I would have told you guys when I was doing the show with you a couple of years ago, hey man, in January of 26, we're going to have Ole Miss playing Indiana for the national championship. You guys would have been like, you are out of your mind. But, we're literally, a game away from – or two games away from that happening. But I haven't made my mind up right now. I do think Indiana's the best team. I think Kirk Cignetti, I think you can make – you make an argument right now in today's NIL and transfer portal. He's the best coach in football. No disrespect to Kirby Smart and his multiple national championships. But Kirk Cignetti's just making it look easy. 14-0 right now, and the way they whipped the hell out of Alabama. That was embarrassing. And it seemed like minutes ago Alabama was dominating their opponents with Nick Saban. And I think Kalen DeBoer's a hell of a coach, but that was a mismatch. And it's so amazing that Indiana's where they are. And teams like Alabama are where they are. Not a bad season. I gave Alabama a solid B on getting to the quarterfinals and playing for the SEC championship and winning a college football playoff game. But, Indiana, obviously, a light years ahead right now.
Yeah. So you give them a B. What are Alabama fans saying about how the season ended? Because we know the expectations with Saban left, the expectations very unrealistic. It's like that with a lot of fan bases around college football. But still, a lot of adversity this year, a lot of injuries. The Ryan Williams thing, that was out of the blue. Nobody expected him to be that bad. What are people saying about Alabama for the end of this season, Lance, and going into next season?
It was the worst way you could lose a game. And I go back last year, they were 9-3 of the regular season. They were the last team out. SMU gets in. They're out. Alabama fans, once they digested it, I think they thought it was a C. Like, how in the hell do we go 9-4? Like, in 17 years under Nick Saban, we only lost more than four games one time. So I think Alabama fans were really kind of riding the fence to see what happened this year. And there was obviously the expectation that Alabama could win a championship. And I think for, moments this season, I think Alabama fans were happy. And then there were moments they weren't. After Florida State, good majority of Alabama fans were like, Kalen DeBoer's not the guy. Then they go on that run, and then people are like, okay, maybe he is the guy. And then they turn around and, you know, they played like they did against Oklahoma and they lost that game. And that was kind of a head scratcher. And then after the SEC championship game, I think Alabama fans were extremely upset. But then you get to a college football playoff, you reset, you go on the road in the rematch, you beat Oklahoma. And I think at that point, Alabama fans were like, okay, this is, I mean, if you take all the bias out and you just look at the facts, you go from 9 wins to 10 wins from year one to year two. You go from not playing in an SEC championship game to playing for a conference championship and being the technically the one seed. You get to a college football playoff in year two and you win a game. So those are definitely steps in the right direction. So there is progression, and I don't think you can deny that. But once you got to that stage against Indiana, where I think Alabama fans still couldn't believe, how in the hell are we a 7-point underdog to Indiana? And then once they saw it play out and they got completely curb stomped, now I think Alabama fans are back to like, I don't know if DeBoer's the guy. Like, DeBoer seems soft. They can't run the football. The offensive line played like shit. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to win a championship. That's what Alabama fans are saying. And I've even heard Bama fans saying, hey, man, if he loses 3 or 4 games next year, he's gone. I don't think that's the case at all. But again, I think we're right back to the spot we were last year, to answer your question, where Alabama fans, they just kind of that shrug emoji. They don't really know about DeBoer.
Yeah. I mean, and now you've got the transfer portal open. Bama's lost 19 players. They've signed 5. They're going through what Texas is going through. Zay and I were talking about it. The programs that have been recruiting at a high level for 4, 5, 6 years, it's harder and harder to retain your second and third team players. So people are coming for them. They know they're talented. They're going to offer them more than what Bama and Texas can offer them. But what's your sense of how Bama's looking in the portal?
Yeah, I think they're okay. I think the problem, and I had this discussion with my butcher friend a couple of minutes ago, you know, we were talking about Mark Cuban and the commitment he's going to make to Indiana football. Now, Alabama doesn't have that guy. They don't have a Cody Campbell. You know, they don't have a Phil Knight. I mean, they just don't have that in their back pocket. What they have is a really big, passionate fan base. But, you know, fan bases that, and I ran into this Florida alum in LA, and we were having a great conversation, and he's a big Rams guy, but he's also, you know, a big Florida backer. And he's like, man, I'm just getting sick. Like, they judge us as alum, especially when we have money, and this guy has a ton of money. He's like, by how much money we give to the program. And like, I don't know anything about John Summerall. And I was trying to tell him, like, I think he's going to be really good. But, you know, I thought Brian Kelly would be really good at LSU. So what the hell do I know? And he's like, man, I'm just sick of giving. Like, the tiers they give me are like low end $500,000 a year. And it just goes up. So it gets frustrating for fan bases if you don't have that guy that's just got a ton of money that wants to bury it different places to continue to give your hard-earned money for a product that's losing 3 or 4 games. Yeah. So Alabama, I know some guys that are involved with the collective. They do a really, really good job. They pump out content. They try to be a little different from some of the other collectives. But when you don't have that alpha that you can go to that can stroke a check at any minute, it gets difficult going back to the same wells over and over again when you're not, you know, printing out championships. So I don't know. I think we're in a completely different world. I think next year, you know, much like last year when, you know, you had SMU in the college football playoff, and, you know, this year you look around and you're like, Ole Miss or Miami is going to be playing for a national championship. I think every year you're going to have a couple of different teams that pop up because they're going to hit the portal right. And I think it's impossible to keep your players. There's zero loyalty now in college football. If somebody can make $1 million more to go somewhere else, they don't care about what the jersey says. And, you know, that's unfortunate. It's exciting for what we do for a living because, you know, talking about Brendan Sorsby getting $5 million, you know, that's sensational. But for, you know, the diehard football fans and the diehard programs, it's just never going to be the same. But at the same time, we finally get what the NFL's gotten. It's a lot of parity. And the 4 teams we've got right now, again, the last team to win a national championship was Miami. And it was a quarter of a century ago, and the other teams, Oregon's never won one. Indiana's never won one. I really don't count Ole Misses because, you know, it was back in 62 and it wasn't an AP. It wasn't a UPI. And I don't know. It's a different world.
What do you think about, you got any upset picks for the NFL playoff weekend?
I hope not the Panthers. We'll see how the Rams play. They've already gotten beat one time in Charlotte earlier this year as 10-point favorites. The AFC is wide open. You know, the NFC, I would be really shocked if it's not the Rams, Seattle. I think Philadelphia with that defense can still get it done. That was one of the reasons that I had to go to SoFi, and I was like, we cannot lose to the Cardinals because I don't want to be the sixth seed and have to go to Philadelphia, and now San Francisco's in that spot, and they're a 4.5-point underdog. So I think power probably will play out in the NFC. AFC, I've got no idea because realistically the hottest team is Jacksonville, and they're a 1.5-point underdog to Josh Allen in Buffalo, and this is that year, like, there's no Patrick Mahomes, there's no Lamar Jackson, there's no Joe Burrow. Like, if Josh Allen, if you would have said that to a Bills fan or Josh Allen before the season started, like, you're going fresh into the AFC playoffs, you're far and away the best quarterback. I mean, this should be their year, but they're not as good as Jacksonville. But I think Buffalo's good chance of winning that game just because of Josh Allen. AFC is wide open. I think the only team in the AFC that probably can't get it done is Pittsburgh. But I don't see any massive upsets out there. But, you know, the only big number this weekend is the Rams.
Yeah. Well, tell everybody what's going on at lanceslock.com.
Yeah, look, so this week in college hoops, we are 7-3.
Let's go.
We are 5-1 again in the college football playoffs. We've got a side up tonight with Miami and Ole Miss. Free play every single day. We've got three college basketball plays up as well. There's a free play up at lanceslock.com. 61% to close out the NFL regular season. We're going to roll in the postseason. Can't wait for it. Jump on board with us. You can buy daily package. You can buy monthly, weekly, whatever you want. lanceslock.com.
LT, you're the best. I can't wait to talk about all this with you next week.
Okay, real quick though, who do you guys have winning these two games? I'm just interested.
I'm going Ole Miss. I'm going the better quarterback, and I'm going Indiana.
Okay. Zay?
I got Miami, Indiana.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. We'll regroup next week, and we'll talk it out.
Okay.
Appreciate you, LT.
Appreciate you, LT.
Enjoy the games.
You too. Hey.